Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are ready to rewind this episode of 49. We had such a terribly tough time trying to come up with moments for this episode. I feel like we say this a decent amount, but because the new era is becoming so new that it's harder to relate to things, but I feel like in this episode, it just didn't have enough content. Like, the journey didn't have enough, you know, it was moving sandbags, or like the boot was a little bit more predictable. The challenge was an obstacle course. Like, it just seemed like it had very stereotypical things happen in Survivor and that aren't all that interesting. I don't know.
I think the interesting thing about this, McKenna, is we're at a point in the new era where it reflects on itself a lot more than it does on what preceded the new era. Right. And because of that, because of this self-imposed rule, you and I have put on the rewind that we are not allowed to reference the new era until next season, until we finally hit season 50. Are we allowed to start reflecting on this era for the rewind? It makes it harder sometimes for us to find things to talk about. And that's not to say that this was a bad episode of Survivor this week.
In fact, it was just bad for us.
Yeah, it just makes our job difficult, but that's fine because it was a very entertaining episode of Survivor. Like, despite the fact that within the first 5 minutes of the episode, it became very clear who was going home, despite the like fabricated drama that they tried to make throughout it, it's like it got to a point where it was like, okay, if Hina loses, we already know Jason's going home. Like, it's a foregone conclusion at this point. And as we progress, we spend enough time with Kella that it's like, okay, maybe Kella is going to lose this challenge. And maybe that, like, we're setting up a lot on Kella. Where's that going to go? And then we get to a moment where it's like, hey, by the way, Hina still loses. And then we get a segment of Kella after the immunity challenge with their chickens. And Phil referenced it on Digging Deeper, so I'll just admit it. It was me. It was me who texted him and said, yeah, it's very obvious who's going because they're showing the winning tribe after the challenge. But at that point, it's like, okay, there's a half hour left. I know what's going to happen. But we still get this like compelling segment about the chickens and everything, and shows us something that we haven't really seen in Survivor for a very long time. So it's still like a good episode. It's just, yeah, where does it fit into the annals of Survivor?
But boy, have we got a show for you, because we dug deep in our brains and found some moments to talk about here. And for our outwit, we are going to talk about seeing through the mist. So Sage is frustrated because she thinks everybody on Kella is eating Shannon up, that she's, you know, spraying her mist around, and everybody is like, oh, that's a great scent, and following her. And she thinks she's the only one that is seeing through this. But then we have Steven and Alex come up to her and be like, all right, so was Shannon doing this a lot at Uli? And Sage is like, wait, you see it too? I'm not alone. Oh my gosh. Like, this was one of the best scenes in this episode. I thought it was hilarious how Sage was just like, wait, you can see through it?
It's so funny because Sage has been kind of played off as this comical non-entity in the season thus far. Just, you know, everything has been a bodily function when it comes to Sage, which has made no sense. Anyone who knows, like, Sage's history knows that Sage was an alternate previously going into this season. like, there's a reason why Sage is being cast. And it's not because she's talking about poop and pimples and things like that, right? So it's been really weird watching her edit. It's like, okay, well, maybe she just, like, doesn't do anything. She's this bit of a kooky character. That's what we're leaning into. After last night, it almost feels like Sage is getting, like, this, like, longevity edit now. And it's like, okay, we were talking about, like, this, like, we were intentionally making Sage out as this ridiculous character who doesn't have any skin in the game whatsoever. But now it's like, oh, she's really playing hard on this new Kella tribe in a way that, like, yeah, she's not, she clearly wasn't going to people and talking to them, but she, because she felt like she was confined by this mist that Shannon's putting out on everyone, this the idea that Shannon is controlling everyone on the tribe so well that Sage feels she can't approach them because they're just drinking Shannon's Kool-Aid. If we get, like, the Sage mastermind edit from here on out, I'm here for it, because that is an exciting change of pace.
I think they're almost giving her the Carolyn edit, where they made Carolyn out to be, like, this wacky, kooky character, but she actually has a lot of insight to what's going on in the game. And I saw that here with Sage, where she knows what's going on, but people aren't going to stick around to believe her. They are, it seems like they're not fully on board. But through this conversation, I think she's starting to gain more allies and more trust, because they are, you know, coming to her with a bit more information. And this almost felt like, you know, we had the dominance of Kim throughout one world and Troyzan her opposition. And Troyzan was like, guys, Kim is gonna win the game. What is going on? And everyone's like, but she's with me. And spreading her mist. And Kim is like, they're doing it in different ways, but it's still that similar of like, see, shark water, shark in water.
Yeah, that's the real interesting thing about what Sage is doing in this episode. Sage doesn't reference Kim, she references another winner in this episode who we'll talk about in a little bit, but it does feel like Shannon's trying to do this Kim thing, right? Like the I'm going to be your best friend. And the way that Sage explains it is that Shannon is, you know, capitalizing on these things that everyone, like their vulnerabilities of everyone, and just making it so that she can connect with all of them. Like you said, that's what Kim Spradlin did. Kim Spradlin was
a relationship with every woman on the tribe, and then started making inroads with the men.
Yeah, exactly. And she was so trusting, and she was so, she just had that air about her that everyone felt like she was with her. And that is what I think Sage fears, right? Sage fears that Shannon is having that effect on people. And I think that's what makes this entire conversation from Sage's perspective so fascinating, because it really did come across in this episode. Like, Sage felt she couldn't even approach the people because Shannon got to them first. And I don't know, Sage hasn't been shown with the most urgency and agency in the game so far, but I wonder if there is that bit of paralysis from seeing this around there and being able to recognize it. Whereas we saw, again, in One World, right, Troyzan kind of ignores it for a while, and it's such a fascinating example in One World, because Troyzan and Kim were the only two non-recruits on that season. So it makes sense that Troyzan's the one who sees how Kim is playing the game and understands what Kim's doing. But he waits a little too long to do it. And I think that's what Sage is scared at this point. It's like, and especially
starting it early, which is great. She's like making the moves to where they are seriously considering Shannon. Like, Christina is like, I love Shannon. I think she's great. But I just got told news that she does this to everybody. I love her, but, you know, maybe the best thing is for me to cut her. So, like, they are making moves behind the scenes for this person that could make a deep run and could have that social butterfly mist that we're talking about.
And I think the only reason why Sage kind of gets this, is in this position where she can call out Shannon on this mist thing and everything. And it's helpful, obviously, that, like, Steven's recognizing it and pointing it out to Alex and things like that. But I think Sage obviously recognizes it because she started on a tribe with Shannon and she's seen this evolution of Shannon's game once she gets there. I mean, I don't know how you felt about it, McKenna, but Shannon almost has like this like almost delusional confessional about how when she's talking about how everyone's just like rabid to talk game all of a sudden. It seems very like in her perspective, everyone loves talking game with her because they just want to talk game.
Yeah.
And I think it's so fascinating when we look at Sage here, because Sage just doesn't have – Sage has this fear that this type of thing in this situation where it very clearly is starting to become a Shannon versus Sage if this tribe goes to tribal council. Sage is in panic mode and feels like she's completely on the outs because Shannon has this ability to connect with people that she doesn't seem to possess.
But what's good is she – isn't panicking, so they take her a bit more seriously too. She is cool, calm, and collected, which is great. And Shannon is, you know, the mist is starting to fade and dissipate in the air, and she gets compared to Parvati the way that she's like touching Alex and flirting with Alex. And I'm not okay with that. But we are going to also talk about Parvati here. She's like the queen of the mist. But one confessional from Jerry always stands out to me is like, if I could bottle up and sell whatever she's got going on, I would make a fortune. Because this is in Heroes versus Villains. And it's just a beautiful like quote. I don't know. It's just so funny to me because Parvati is like putting on her mist to Russell and Danielle, like that she's just, oh, woe is me. I'm just a girl to Parvati or to Russell. So he works with her. And so many people like Jerry, like Randy, like Rob see through all of whatever Parvati's doing.
I think the fascinating thing about Parvati as an example in this is we've seen Parvati's mist work before, right? Like we see it work in Cook Islands. We see how she's able to kind of manipulate the guys there, especially like someone like Nate in that season, right? And how it doesn't work on Yule. And then we see how she's able to win a game of Survivor because she has this ability to mist people as well, right? Mm-hmm. We see what she's able to do with James in Micronesia.
With Natalie, with Alexis, with... you know, with Ozzy to the point before his blind side, but
and then so it's very interesting when we look at a third time returning player who's already won the game, who still has this ability to cast a spell on people, right? Despite the fact that so many people there are aware of the way she plays the game, are aware of her dangers as a player in the game and what she's capable of doing, people still fall into her trap. I mean, it's part of the reason why she's a Black Widow, right? Like she lulls everyone into this false sense of security and then is able to manipulate and use them to the best of her capabilities. And the fact that we have Jerry, who's like the original Black Widow, coming out and saying, okay, like Parvati can do this. I wish I could still do that. But like, I realize I'm not the like hot stuff that I was back when I was first playing this game, which is wild, Jerry. Wild. But no. It's just fascinating seeing this because, like, this type of mist, I feel like we don't talk about the mist in Survivor as much as
like, it's like a big brother thing. But, like, Survivor has a mist. A lot of a lot of castaways have that, like, air about them that they can just walk on the beach and everyone's like, got it, will do.
Yeah, right. And then like sometimes like that mist is something a little more overbearing, like a Tom Westman scenario, right? Where it's just like the leadership mist that like riles you up and makes it so you don't want to go against them. Sometimes it's a JT mix, right? Mist where you're just
good
like,
old boy.
The good old boy of the aw shucks. Like I want you to win. I don't want to win myself. I want you to win now. But I think with these two examples, with Kim and Parvati, and specifically, like, the opposition to them, it feels so much closer to Sage and Shannon. And I think it's so funny to be talking about this with, like, two of the most dominant winners in Survivor history like two of the best players to ever play Survivor and their ability to miss, and we're comparing it to Shannon. And I think this is, McKenna, you had mentioned like you were kind of offended by this like poverty analogy in this
episode. Because I'm not feeling it yet, but like if Shannon somehow makes this, you know, makes the merge and makes a run, and we still see this, like people are seeing through the mist, but she's still around. That is very poverty-esque, where like they see through her game, but at the same time, they're not doing anything about it. They're not, you know, she's not on the jury bench.
It's just so fascinating because it feels like it's been forever since we had a poverty comparison in Survivor. I can't even remember when was the last time we actually had that comparison.
We've had, I'm pretty sure Chelsea from Island of the Idols was probably compared to Barbity. I know for sure Libby from Ghost Island was. Speaking of Island of the Idols, go watch it. It's episode 6, Suck It Up, Buttercup. We are watching that over on the Patreon. You'll see why in just a little bit. So go watch that so you can listen to us this weekend.
It's just like this idea that like for so long in the 30s, I felt like we kept talking about like it was the poverty 2.0, the poverty 2.0.
Yeah.
It was like
that the first like of the like archetype or
the
whatever.
Attractive, smarter brunette woman, right?
Like it was you didn't even have to be brunette. You just had to be a hot girl.
Yeah, just a hot girl. Just a hot girl who, you know,
because Libby kind was of not a little
bit. That's true. She wasn't. Who could flirt a little bit, but it feels like in the new era we've kind of moved away from that a little bit, and maybe that's because of like the changing casting. Maybe it's just because, you know, we're casting super fans and super fans kind of realize the ridiculous of saying every hot woman is poverty is kind of dumb. But it's so interesting to see this kind of come up again toward like in season 49 now, and how it's like it's Shannon, right? Like Shannon, it's funny to have this comparison when
she also does have that spirituality that Parvati does now with the yoga and everything like that. So, hey.
It's just like, I don't know. Shannon doesn't feel like she fits that conventional Parvati 2.0 stereotype that was built in the 30s. So to see that comparison is really
that's
funny.
That's maybe why they're not seeing it.
It's possible. And I think it's kind of why it goes into like the Kim category, really, right? Where it's like, but it feels like Shannon's overplaying it a lot more than someone like Kim would. And to the point where everyone is kind of seeing it, and it's not just like Sage. I think a comparison between Sage and Troy Zen is actually very apt because like they kind of are like these two kooky characters a little bit. But it's funny seeing like the relief that Sage gets when she realizes other people are saying it.
And are willing to do something about it.
Potentially. We wouldn't know because they don't go to tribal council.
Yet.
And they won't go to tribal council next week because there's another tribe swap coming.
All right. We are going to move into our outplay portion. And we are going to talk about using these cages in challenges. Because I think it's a really fun part. And especially this specific version of the cage where you pick it up, move it, you're all trapped inside. Because we have two different versions that we're going to talk about. One where you pick it up and move it, and two where it's the, all right, jump over the cage and bring something out of it. So we're going to go right into Island of the Idols here. And that this is the challenge where Elaine has to get her block-a-vote advantage. And this cage scenario provides just such a great way to like everyone's huddled around this one table. This is where the advantage is. She has to step away from the group and shove it down her pants. It just provides a different mechanic for Survivor to do something like this, where they can add that element for an idol, for an advantage, for something where you have to be ballsy.
The fascinating thing about the fact that Elaine is doing this challenge in like trying to get this advantage in the middle of this challenge is it's actually this timed moment, right? Like there's a very specific moment in this challenge where she can actually get the advantage. And I think that's what's fascinating about it and what this cage kind of offers as an opportunity. When we compare this challenge to what we saw this week on 49, what we saw this week on 49 is so simple in comparison.
It is, but also in 49, the bars moved. Like, they had to, mm-hmm. like, deal with the bars, where in 39, everything that they needed to lift was, like, structured to the yes. cage, which was interesting. And the way that they had to navigate the cage, I think, was a little bit tougher, because they had to go from the water up the little beach hill and onto the sand, where in Island of the Idols, they just had, like, a snake kind of pattern that they had to navigate. So, in a sense, the challenge was almost easier, but also more physically demanding, maybe? I don't know.
It almost seems like there was more coordination needed for the Island of the Idols version of it because of the navigation aspect of it.
Right, yes.
Even, like, the lifting up over the table so that,
yep.
you know, where they're trying to unlock or untie these balls, which is where Elaine gets her advantage. And again, that's the fascinating thing about this. And it's a mechanic that I don't think Survivor's really used. Even though, like, we haven't had a revisit of, like, getting idols in challenges and stuff, right? Like, getting advantages in mm-hmm. challenges as much anymore.
Right.
And the previous times we've seen it, it's always been at, like, the end of the challenge where they can go back and they can go to it. But mm-hmm. in Island of the Idols, it's this moment where you have literally until you are done getting those balls. Otherwise, you're out of luck, Elaine,
yeah.
because this cage is moving again.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's fascinating about it. And I think it's something that, if Survivor was to go back to advantages hidden in challenges, this is kind of how I'd want to see it implemented. I want to see those in the middle of the challenge
mm-hmm.
where something's going on and there's a limited time to get it, rather than right. here, like, just like, make sure, hope everyone's distracted as someone's trying to throw balls at the end. I think the
only middle of the challenge one that comes to the top of my head, there might be more, but was Jeremy's. It was, like, attached where, like, their ladder was or something mm-hmm. like that, but he could trail behind. He didn't have yeah. to, like, do it right in the middle. And I just think you're right. This navigation of the cage, everyone is trapped in the same area. I think they should utilize this more often, because we've only seen it in Island of the Idols and 45 and now 49. I really think this movement of the cage with teamwork and mm-hmm. not just, like, staged portions where, like, all right, one person's going to swim and do the course, another person's going to swim and do the course. Like, it's using teamwork to maneuver throughout the challenge, which is a great breakup of, you know, the monotony that Survivor Challenge can be sometimes.
This was a very simple, straightforward challenge, but it still felt exciting. Like, it visually worked because you could see how the teams stack up against each other. It wasn't mm-hmm. an obstacle course. It was a little different. Yeah. Was it super simple? From sitting on the couch, yes. Like, from a visual standpoint, it's very simple. Is hauling that cage simple? Probably not. Especially if you were Hina, who had people of way too many different sizes, and it made it very difficult to move that cage. It was very clear, like, watching them try to move this cage. What do you take of the aspect of, in 49, we see them have to dig a single person out of the cage to be their rebounder, but mm-hmm. in Island of the Idols, everyone has to dig into the cage to start, except the rebounder, who's always already waiting at the end.
Yeah, I would rather have one person, I think, dig out and be the rebounder. I do like the log dig. I think it's a fun, you know, navigating through. But at the same, once you pass, like, your biggest person through, it mm-hmm. becomes just, all right, rotate, rotate, rotate. Like, it loses some of its, like, fun after a bunch of people go through. So, like, give me the struggle of one person getting out of the cage.
But is it better to have, like, the smallest person getting out, or watching them have to dig a big enough hole so the biggest person can get through?
I'll take either.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
But
I just thought it's interesting how, like, these challenges,
yeah, they're so similar, but they're just so different.
Yeah.
But what also happens in this challenge is they have to get into the cage somehow. The cage is in the water, and they have to go and climb over the cage and jump into it, which is typically how we see our cages in Survivor. And it happened for the first time in Karamoan. That's the first time we see them having to jump over the cage. They either do like the snake, the fish traps, I think those are like the main two that they have to deal with the full cage for.
Yeah, and the first time it's a chest. It's just a chest that they have to get out of the cage so that they can then pull it on like the floating jack or whatever it is. It's fascinating because, first off, to think that we didn't see a giant cage in the ocean until Karamoan is kind of wild. I think we've seen cages.
We've seen before. Walls too, because like they've had to like fit things through the walls. Like the rice is typically through like a small hole in a wall.
Mm-hmm. And like we've had like prisoner escape before, which obviously has like cages kind of, but it's still different than this. Whereas this is like that very structural cube cage that like feels like a prison in the way that it's
yeah, and just to try and haul yourself out of the water to then go up it, to then jump down it, to then lift it, or just to go back up and over it, that's insane and so hard. And so when people like can't get up and over the cage, I'm not surprised, because it's so tough.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, and it's fascinating to kind of see the evolution of this challenge to be, I mean, yes, obviously, like, those first few times where, like, climb in, get the thing out, and then it's just like, no, just move the cage instead. And it's fun to see that evolution, and this is kind of that fun thing that we fall back on a little when it comes to Survivor, especially in the new era where we get, like, the monotony of the same challenge over and over again. Mm-hmm. It was so nice. It was also nice, like, that we end this challenge and it's not a puzzle at the end, despite the fact that like our brain, Phil even on last week's Rewind was like, oh, I bet Hina wins because it'll probably end with a puzzle and Jason can just finish it off. It was nice not having that. It was nice not having that. It was nice being something different, right?
Though it is, I don't know how to feel, because the first, before swap, all puzzles, after swap, all physical. And then now we have this next swap. What are we going back to? Because, you know, we've done now a puzzle ending and a physical ending. Do we go back to the puzzle because we haven't seen it? Then Jason wins. Or do they not want Jason to win? I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're switching into three tribes again next week anyway. So it'll be completely different. Yeah. Maybe something else that we've never seen before, maybe. But we've had this like nice refreshing time where we got the two tribe challenges. That really, really just reminded us of how much we like two tribe challenges.
Exactly. All right. We are moving on to our outlast portion. And we were like, all right, we have to find something in this journey. This journey was really fun to watch. I really like the journey. I like the duo aspect of them having to move the sandbags. I thought, you know, we were thinking about certain things. I'm like, wow, this is basically the old version of Sweat and Savvy.
Yep.
They're just using it as a journey, but can't do that. But then MC uncovers this surprise second part of the challenge. And that's what we're going to talk about, where there's a surprise second aspect to something that you're doing in Survivor. So here it's their journey. We're going to go into a surprise second part of a family visit, and then what they think is a merge, but is actually a swap. So like getting the, all right, here's an advantage, but only one person can find it, is such an interesting twist, plus the sandbag aspect with the timer. It's like, I don't know. It's very, it was a very cool amalgamation of some things we have seen before, but it was put together in the right way.
I texted you as this portion of the episode started. I was like, this is the worst. I hate this. Why do they just have to move sandbags or else they lose their vote? This is dumb. Because that's how I felt. I was like, okay, what's going on here? Like, why don't they get a choice? They don't, is this
Winners at War where they have to move the logs for 3 coins?
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, what is happening here? There's no choice. They have to risk their vote no matter what. That's kind of lame. And then, you know, MC reveals that thing. What I think would have been better and like maybe this is just me like wanting this from a production standpoint, because the note specifically said they had to read it together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should have been a read it together thing.
Right. Yeah. Just like go and run.
I think that would have been more likely than that someone actually tries to go get the advantage. Mm-hmm. But.
Oh, I just have to go to the bathroom.
But having this happen.
Yeah.
First off, also this hourglass, like I saw how many sandbags they had to move and I was like, there's no way they're going to do this. Like there are so mm-hmm. many of them. They had all the time in the world. This is insane. And it might be because MC's a beast.
Hourglasses left over from Sweat and Zabby.
Yeah, well, all the ones that Jelinski didn't break, right?
Yeah.
But, like, watching this go and then, like, seeing the second part get unveiled, and then it kind of amounting to nothing, except for, like, Nate, like, really finessing his way through it to make sure that, like, MC didn't get the advantage mm-hmm. and that he didn't lose his vote. But like, that was impressive.
Nothing. Yeah. It amounted to Nate trying to strategically work around this advantage.
Yeah. It was interesting. It was a fascinating segment of the episode. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy it in the end, but like I was so ready to hate it. But again, like this is something that Survivor doesn't feel like they do a lot, mm-hmm. where they introduce like this second thing of what's going on.
Yeah, right? I mean, we're talking about seasons 17 and 19 here. So like let's get into Gabon, where they think they're having their merge feast and they have a bucket on the table saying, open this when you're done eating. So it's like, okay, we have, you know, maybe these are our buffs for the merge. We haven't gotten those yet. Great. We'll just keep eating. And then it's surprise. It's actually a swap. Go do your thing. And here's the buffs and yada, yada.
And Randy even states it in the confessional, right? He's like, I know as soon as we open that box, this game is back on, and we don't want this game to be on right now.
Yeah.
Like, let us do this. Like, they were so much like, I don't want a game right now. They found an idol and threw it in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. But just that, like, looming box on the table would have me reeling of, like, what's in it? I can't fully enjoy this meal because what's in the box? What's in the box?
And that is the thing. And I think that's what's different about this and how it is slightly different. This is almost... this is more akin to, like, the bottle twist in Cook Islands.
Mm.
Which, you know, one of the infamous worst twists in the game ever. But, like, this Gabon swap feels more akin to that. Where, or, I mean, even, like, closer to like the Thailand not merge, right? Like it kind of has like remnants of that, but there is that looming threat of like, I know there's a second part to this. And that's what's so different from it and 49, where 49 is the uncovering of it. And again, this is why I think like 49 didn't.
But I also feel like the moving the sandbags, I'd be like, there's gotta be something underneath these sandbags. Like I was like, I'm pretty sure there's a second part to this. So as I'm moving these sandbags, I probably think I'm running through the numbers of what could this be? Same with like, I'm having this feast. I'm running the numbers of what could be in that box.
Mm-hmm. And the fascinating thing about both of these instances is like, you have to do both of these things together. Mm-hmm. Again, like 49 was like, you have to read this together. And Gabon's also like, obviously you have to open this together because you're all eating here. So
yeah. And then we have Samoa, where they're on this, you know, nice, lovely family visit. And then they get told, all right, look at your phone again. And in the media files, here is a clue to an idol that's at your camp. And it's like, all of a sudden they're taken out of their nice, cushy family visit and then just thrown back into the game. And of course, Russell is there on that family visit and is like, gotta get that idol.
Well, and it's Russell. It's funny because like it's hidden on the phone, right? It's like a look through the photos that you're taking and stuff. And it's like,
yeah,
hey, by the way, here's an idol advantage. And it's like, oh, interesting. This is, again, one of those things that I think the game... I don't know, maybe the advancement of technology has just made it so that we don't get things like this anymore because we don't have these like old school Sprint sponsors and these old phones that you look through like this anymore. But I don't know. I feel like the game could do a little bit more with these second things. And that's what's so nice about this episode of 489. It's like, this is something, again, right? Like, we're talking about 17 and 19. We haven't seen this type of thing in a long time. But maybe the game should incorporate this more. And likely it is, because as Phil always says, like, 49 is definitely testing things out for 50 to see if they run properly. So I'm sure we'll see things like this in 50. But the game can just do so much more, because Russell seeing that photo is then like, what do I do with this? Do I delete it right now? Like,
yeah.
No one else needs to see it.
Yeah, exactly. But then, like, it some people are kind of like, oh, well, what's that? And then it's just so, I don't know. It, like, having diabolical, I guess, on the family visit, to throw in game as soon as you hit the mat, as soon as you, like, touch down back at your camp beach, to be like, all right, gotta go, bye.
But I feel like that's still what Survivor was back then, right? Like, yeah, Survivor is still that. I mean, we expect, in anytime there's a reward, we still kind of somewhat expect an advantage to possibly show up, right? Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't happen that much anymore because, you know, they're either going to the sanctuary where it does happen, or they're having something at their beach where it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But, like, we're kind of still processing the world of Survivor that way, where it's like, there's a reward. Where's the reward within the reward?
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I think that aspect from Samoa that was missing from 489 was the ability to find it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, how much more exciting would that be if MC uncovers this thing, throws a sandbag on it, just bolts into the jungle, and Nate's like, what just happened?
Mm-hmm. That would be funny. And then he comes back and sees the thing is like, all right, what do I do now? Because they don't want to both lose their votes because of the sandbags, but then the advantage and all that.
The one thing I was confused about with this whole journey, and maybe, like, you can give me some clarification, because it specifically says, like, the advantage goes away once the task is completed. Could potentially Nate have just, like, taken that last sandbag, thrown it down there, let MC find the advantage, and then, like, the advantage doesn't work?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, MC, we're running out of time, when there's still clearly half an hourglass left.
Exactly. All right. Well, that's our show, ladies and gents and non-binary friends. We are going to be watching Island of the Idols episode 6, Suck It Up Buttercup, over on the Patreon this weekend. And, you know, come for the times. John, what do we got going on in the Specialist Universe?
Well, Phil and we'll recap the episode on Wednesday, so make sure you check that out. Earlier today, Phil was joined by Russell Muscle TV to dig deeper into this last episode. It's an interesting podcast, definitely worth a listen to. Don't be afraid when the audio cuts out all of a sudden. Phil's internet decided it didn't like him for a little bit. Then, McKenna, you and Kyle will be talking Amazing Race tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, talking we about are. This,
quite frankly, another exciting episode of The Amazing Race. I am loving this season so far.
It's so good. Fun.
Phil will be joined by Liz Wilcox on Sunday for the predictions and power rankings, so you know that is a must listen to. And then Tegwith will be joined by Franny Marin for Matt Chat. Then we do this all again, and we'll see you again next Thursday.
Alrighty, everybody. See you next Thursday.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.